Welcome to the first episode of the Science Applied podcast. So my vision for the show is to take real world situations and experiences and then use science to explain them. Because what is the point of science if you can't apply it to the world around us? Science Applied. Today we are looking at the science behind grief. We've all seen it or will experience it in at least one point during our lives, and it is defined as a deep sorrow, usually as a result of the death of a loved one. This is an interesting topic because it is a natural human instinct. Even small children can experience grief as a result of the death of a beloved fish, for example. Researchers have even documented animals showing grief. Chimpanzees and elephants can die as a result of just losing a loved one. And elephants in particular have funerals for their dead, in which they surround the deceased members and throw dirt upon themselves. However, in this episode, we are going to focus on grief in humans. We are lucky enough to have Michael and his mother Ruth here. We will look at the real world story of the tragic and unjust loss of Francis, Michael's brother, in the early 1980s, the symptoms they experienced afterwards, and the road to recovery. Michael and Ruth, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So Michael, let's start with you. If it's all right, can you talk a bit about yourself and Francis?
Yeah, so Francis and I grew up in what's called The Park. It's the inner city of Scarborough, Ontario. He was the best. He was the kindest soul and was the guy everyone wanted to be around. He had that kind of energy. We were close growing up. He was a year older than I was, and he protected me and looked out for me. We had the best times. I remember one time when our mom left the house to work, we would watch these stupid late night Italian comedies just so we could maybe see a few seconds of boobs. One time he called me while I was in the bathroom saying they're showing, and I ran out to the TV, still with my pants around my ankles, falling and crawling just to catch a glimpse. But then I got there to look up, and it's just a meat commercial, and Francis was dying. He had the best laugh.
Wow. So if you can you talk a little bit about his death?
Yeah, so what happened during the summer? Early 80s. Mm-hmm. Francis was just in a fight and was injured. But Francis was like that, you know, full of heart. He stood up for himself, tried to get me to do the same. Me, Francis, and a few of his friends were back at this barbershop we used to hang at, patching Francis up, you know, and out of nowhere, police officers came in yelling, demanding ID, ordering us to stand against the wall.
For what reason?
Did they need one? That's just how it was in the park. Anyways, Francis was hurt, couldn't get up. The injustice must have gone to him, because he started stumbling towards one of these officers, unarmed, no way of endangering him. The rest is just a blur. Next thing I know, his body hit the floor.
We are going to stop right there for our first deep dive. So Michael remembering some parts of this horrifying moment while being blurry on others is actually quite common for those in grief. The blurry parts are called repressed memories by psychologists and is an area of active research. The exact mental processes are not completely understood. One study from Dr. Linda Williams found that 38% of adults had issues recollecting sexual abuse from their adolescence. So although the trauma was different, a connection can still be made. Dr. Sigmund Freud believed the subconscious mind actually pushed these memories away to avoid pain, but can still affect an individual on the subconscious level. But Michael also had a very good memory of other parts of the trauma. This can be attributed to flashbulb memory, a concept coined and studied in the 1970s by Dr. Brown and Dr. Kulik, and is defined as having a very clear memory of situations which cause extreme emotion, such as witnessing a murder. This clear memory is the result emotions have in forming strong neural connections. If a moment is more emotional, studies show it is also more memorable. So we kind of see a mixture of the two psychological concepts to understand Michael's recollection of his brother's death. So Michael, how have you changed as a result of Francis's death?
After that moment, my life completely changed. I was a different person. I was now the man of the family, the protector of the family. I had to grow up, be more serious, take care of my mom. I just felt numb to the pain. I try not to show it because I know how it impacted her.
An interesting part of grief is its uniqueness and how it affects each individual. Neuropsychologist Dr. Janelle Phillips has studied grief throughout her career. Her studies have found that the symptoms of grief are in part due to neurochemicals released in the brain while grieving. These neurochemicals can cause the disruptions of hormones in the brain, which is different in each person. For Michael, that meant numbness. For others, it may be sadness or even anger. In the years after, were you able to work?
No, with my mom, the way she was after the incident, I had to find work. I got a job at a rundown grocery store in the area.
Did you go to college?
Nah, I had to focus on work. I don't know if I would have anyways. Kids from the park don't usually go to college.
We see that Michael's life became less than ideal after Francis's death, and this can be attributed to what is called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. These are negative experiences that occur at a young age, such as witnessing the death of a sibling, and can be devastating in a person's life. A study from Dr. Giovanelli and colleagues found that an ACE can reduce the chances of a person getting a post-secondary education or having a skilled job by 50%. And that's what we see in Michael's life. Thanks, Michael. So Ruth, can you talk a bit about how the death of your son impacted you?
Yes. So the death of Francis broke me. I used to work long hours as a cleaner all across town. I took every hour of work I could, trying to support my two boys. After his death, I felt lost. I barely worked. I barely cooked. I used to make these wonderful Trinidadian meals, but I lost the will to do so after Francis passed. I just felt lost in my life. I was exhausted emotionally and physically. I felt overcome with sadness.
The symptoms experienced by Francis's mother after his death can be explained using conclusions from a study by Dr. Harold Gundell and colleagues. Gundell took 8 grieving women and showed them a picture of the loved one who had passed recently. The women were connected to a functional MRI, which maps their brain activations. All the women had activations in the posterior cingulate cortex, frontal cortex, and cerebellum, areas of the brain associated with regulating sleep and appetite. Therefore, researchers theorized that issues around tiredness and changes in diet associated with grieving is a result of disruptions in these areas of the brain. And that's what we see in Ruth. Ruth, Can you elaborate more on your mental state after this happened? Did you feel like the same person?
I felt like a completely different person. I began to lose my mind, to lose control. There were times when I just picked up and walked out of the house, without my shoes and in my nightgown. I was lucky Michael was there to bring me back. One time, I was even struck by a car when I wandered away, and that was more than 10 years after his death. I lost myself. I became very quiet, and for a long time, I didn't like being around others.
There was a study conducted in 2008 by Dr. Patrizia Lenin, which found that the perpetually activated sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight response, in those who have experienced extreme grief can actually change the genetic makeup and brain structure of humans. The result can be dramatic changes in a person's health and personality, which is likely why Ruth felt like a different person after the death of Francis. This can also be connected to Michael's personality changing significantly as well. Were there any other irregular behaviors you experienced?
There were times when I set the table for a third person, even though it was just Michael and I. I just missed him so much. When he died, I felt as though part of myself died with him. I wanted him to come back to me. I wanted us to be a family again. There was another time when I called the operator asking for Francis, hysterically crying. That was a real low point for me.
Ruth's behavior here points to her having what is called an adjustment disorder and is defined by the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM, as having irregularly severe symptoms such as denying death, inability to function, and loss of mental stability. By Ruth doing things like calling him or setting a place at the table, as well as walking out of the house almost uncontrollably, it can be reasoned that she likely had this disorder in the years after Francis's death. Preliminary studies suggest that this occurs in approximately 1% of healthy individuals who experience grief, so it is actually quite common. But you obviously have improved significantly. Can you talk about your road to recovery?
There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about him. But things have definitely gotten better with my mental state and health. I now cook and can laugh and can be around other people. What really got me here was the support of Michael, as well as his friend Aisha, and Francis's close friend named Jelly. Aisha really helped me open up to people, and Jelly got me back into cooking. They came and lived with us years after Francis's death, but having them around really helped me. We came together. I don't know if I would be here today without them. I owe them my life.
Although studies around grief recovery are scarce, research from Dr. Janelle Phillips, who was mentioned earlier, and her colleagues suggest support systems as the most effective method for overcoming a wide range of traumatic experiences. How exactly this recovery impacts our brain and genetic structure is still unknown, but studies are ongoing. Those around Ruth provided her with the support she needed to return to what she used to be. It is also important to note how in both Michael and Ruth, you can really tell they still feel the pain of Francis's death. This is in line with studies from the National Cancer Institute, which reported that grief can never truly disappear, but just dampens over time. They still care about Francis, but his memory does not consume their life as it used to. Thank thanks so much for speaking with me and being so open with our listeners.
I hope my story will show others that are grieving that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That concludes this week's episode of Science Applied. I hope you learned something about the science behind grief and the recovery from it, and can take it into your own life. Check back next week when we look at the science behind love, where we bring in a couple that has been happily married for 70 years. See you then. Science Applied.